This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name is Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. And if you're wondering what anarchism is all about, no, it's not what's happening in the world today. Anarchism is an ideology, political philosophy, which is based on the concept of creating societies without rulers. Why without rulers? Rulers and inequalities in power and wealth are the primary instruments which create most of the disruption and terror that we see in the world on a daily basis. So an anarchist society is a society which is based on the creation of a society which is based on direct democratic principles and where wealth is held in common and used for the common good. And those of you who equate anarchism or anarchy with chaos need to think again. All right, let's start off with this week's big news, the new legislation that the Parliament has been recalled for: hate speech and guns. Hate speech and guns. Obviously, the massacre at Bondi Beach a few weeks ago has demanded a government response. And it's fascinating to see how people who have been using rhetoric to support the introduction of hate speech legislation are resistant to the idea of having any changes to gun laws in this country. And the Liberal National Party seems to be at the forefront of this resistance. Because obviously you need a motive and you need a means if you're going to carry out an atrocity. You need a motive and a means. Now, the idea that you can legislate regarding hate speech is interesting. Because what is hate speech? Is it speech that gives offence or causes alarm in certain quarters? Or is it something else? Now, obviously, there are many people in our society who are involved in activities which promote division. And I'm the first to acknowledge that I'm one of those. But the division that I'm interested in is a division between the rich and poor, a division between institutional power and the rest of society, a division which is based on the acceptance of capitalism private investment for private profit has the essence of existence in 21st century Australia. I mean, I would like to create disquiet amongst the Australian people regarding growing inequality in this country. So is this hate speech? I've said over and over again on this program over decades that the best way to rule is to divide. And we have a nation, as a people, are divided constantly on the basis of class, on the basis of income, on the basis of race, on the basis of gender, on the basis of sexuality, and the list goes on and on. So it'll be interesting to see what is encompassed in the hate speech legislation, especially legislation which has been whipped up quite quickly. Now, the other thing is that the government currently has bundled gun reform into the hate speech reform, because obviously they talk about motive and means. And although people have motives, they want to decrease the ability of the means that is available to people who promote division in society. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few days regarding this legislation. And more interesting will be what will be the consequences of that hate speech legislation in terms of people like you and me being able to articulate ideas which may offend people, which may cause disquiet in the community, but which are not based on dividing people on the basis of religion or sexuality or gender, and the list goes on and on. So let's see what's hatched. Let's see what the curate's egg looks at the end of the day. Regarding gun reform, well, obviously, although everybody will be nodding in terms of the hate speech legislation, although some religious organisations are already very concerned, they will come under the hammer because of their type of preaching in terms of promoting divisions in society. But interesting to see what will happen as far as gun reform is concerned in this country, because let's not forget there are more guns in Australia, legal guns, than there were during the Port Arthur massacre, although the population has almost doubled during that period. And I think the important thing to remember is that the men who were involved in the atrocity at Bondi Beach were using legally registered firearms. Not firearms they bought on the black market, but legally registered firearms. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. Now, I'd just like to remind you about the Tunaminaway and Morbohina commemoration. 2026 marks the 20th anniversary of this commemoration, which has been held in Melbourne on the 20th of January to acknowledge the ultimate price that Tunaminaway and Morbohina paid for being involved in resistance against white colonisation. Now, this year it marks the 184th anniversary of the execution of these two freedom fighters. And why were they executed? Because they resisted the destruction of their culture, their lands, and their people. The type of thing that we, in 2026, emulate. And what I mean by emulate is the type of thing that we think, oh, that's good, they resisted. But let's not forget that this country, for far too long, has ignored its history. it's ignored that 60,000 years of 60,000 years of occupation by over 250 distinct different First Nations people which lived on the islands around this continent, on this continent, were wiped away in less than 100 years by colonisers who described Australia as terra nullius, the land of no one. And it wasn't until the High Court decision in 1992, the Marlborough High Court decision, that we saw that this was legal fiction. So I'll go through the ceremony because it's an important ceremony. Now, this is a respectful, inclusive ceremony. We understand there are divisions amongst Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander groups. We understand there are still many Australians who refuse to acknowledge this country's black history. But it's important that people like us make the effort to remember, because the effects of colonisation didn't end with the occupation of the land. The effects of colonisation on First Nations people continue to be profoundly felt by First Nations people in this country. So Tanaminaway and Morbulahina were resistance freedom fighters in Tasmania. They were survivors of the 30-year war. And at the end of the 30-year war, I think it was in 1832, 359 survivors of the massacres which occurred in Tasmania were deported to Flinders Island. Within 3 years, because of disease and neglect, the population was reduced to 89. 17 of these survivors were brought across as assistants to Augustus Robinson, who was the lead figure in mopping up guerrilla resistance in Tasmania, to come to Melbourne, I think it was in 1839, to civilise the Victorian blacks. Now, Robinson and his crew soon forgot about the 19 Flinders Islanders who'd come to this Victoria. And five of them, Tanaminaway from Robbins Island in northwest Victoria, Morbulahina, also known as Timmy, from Ben Lomond, northeast Tasmania. I said Tanaminaway was northwest Tasmania, northeast Tasmania, and three Aboriginal women, Planobina, Putirana, and Thraganini, had had enough and began a guerrilla campaign of resistance on the Mornington Peninsula and through the Dandenong Ranges right down to Onthaggi. And during those 6 weeks, they caused consternation among the squatters who fled back to Melbourne. They were finally captured on the 20th of November 1841, put on trial for resisting colonisation. The two men were found guilty and sentenced to hang. The women were found not guilty, given back to the care, in inverted commas, of Augustus Robertson, and eventually made their way back to Flinders Island. Now, the important thing about Tanaminaway and Morbulahina is that very few Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders were executed by the state. Tens of thousands of First Nations people whose blood soaks the earth were massacred, poisoned, shot, burnt, buried, so people would get access to their land. And it wasn't who you think it was, you know, the old convicts, although they did some of the killing. The major people who benefited were rich squatters who used three labour, that's convict labour, and three land which they stole from this country's First Nations people. But this so-called secret war occurred out of sight, out of mind. But the thing about Tanaminua Morbohina was that they resisted, and they paid the ultimate price for that resistance. Now, the Tanaminua Morbohina Commemoration Committee was formed over 20 years ago. And it took us 10 years of constant activity to ensure that a memorial was erected at the site of their execution in front of the old Melbourne jail at the corner of Victoria Parade and Franklin Street in Melbourne. It was a particularly difficult struggle. It was a divisive struggle. And of the seven foundation members of the Tanaminua Morbohina Committee, only two survive. I'd like to pay my respects to the five that have since died. There was my late wife, Ellen Jose, John O'Brien, who died last year, Rick Simpson, Bill Murphy, Joy Murphy. Since 2016, after a lot of conflict, humiliation, degradation, ostracisation, marginalisation over the previous 10 years, we eventually forced the Melbourne City Council to build this monument to the frontier wars. This is not just a monument to Tanaminua and Morbohina. This is a monument to the frontier wars. It is one of the few, very few, and possibly the only major monument in a major urban centre in this country. There are monuments to Australians who fought other people's battles overseas, across the country. But very few which remember those individuals, most of them unnamed, unheralded, who fought to protect their way of life, their culture, their language, their family, their clan, their tribe. Now, we have failed because we hoped that in 2016, with the erection of the monument, there would be other people around this country that who would emulate the struggle we were involved in, who would agitate for the establishment of monuments to the frontier wars across the country. It's one thing to be reactive and remove a few statues or protest against Australia Day on the 26th of January, but it's something else to be proactive and actually take that struggle forward. This is a struggle for all of us. It's not just a struggle for First Nations people. It's not a struggle for relatives of those who died. This is a struggle for all of us. Because what it does, it allows us to move forward and attempt to tackle the growing inequality that we see in this country, especially as far as First Nations people are concerned. So I encourage you, if you are in the city of Melbourne on Tuesday the 20th of January, to join us to commemorate the 184th anniversary of the execution of the two freedom fighters, Tanaminua and Morbohina. The monument is at the corner of Victoria Street and Franklin Street in Melbourne. If you ever visit Melbourne, visit the monument. We encourage people to leave flowers on the monument, and we encourage people to come and join us at midday on Tuesday the 25th of January. Bring flowers to place on the monument. So it's a relatively simple, respectful ceremony. Starts at midday. We've got a number of Indigenous speakers and a representative from the Melbourne City Council speaking from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. Then a few minutes after 1 p.m. we walk down the main street, Franklin Street, to the Queen Victoria Markets behind our banner, lest we forget. And we hold a second ceremony at the spot we believe they are buried. If you can't make it, I encourage you to look at the webpage, Tunnamaul, T-U-N-N-E-R, Maul, M-A-U-L.com. And the good thing is the first hour of the ceremony will be broadcast live on Community Radio 3CR. And we're very grateful to Community Radio 3CR, who year after year have been broadcasting the first hour. All right, let's move on. Let's move on. So hopefully we'll see you on the 25th of January. If you can't make it, there's always next year. And if you can't make it next year, there's the year after. But the important thing is, it's not just about this, these individuals, this monument, this story. It's about acting as a catalyst to encourage other people around the country to become involved, to find out who died, and to ensure that tangible monuments are left to them. Because without a tangible monument, people forget. Well, talking about tangible monuments, the buffoon in Washington has transformed into a hypocritical tyrant. Isn't that wonderful? Now, you may find this hard to believe, but there are 8.3 billion people on planet Earth, right? 8.3. I think there are about 350 million people in the United States of America, and I reckon that's about 3.5, maybe 3.3% of the world's population. Now, obviously, these people are powerfully militarily, and they think they can do what they like. They thought they could do what they liked in Vietnam and came off second best. They thought they could do what they liked in Iraq and came off second best. They thought they could do what they like in Afghanistan and created a climate which has seen one of the most repressive governments on earth being reinstituted as the governing authority in Afghanistan. We saw the intervention in Iraq not only, increasing the number of body bags, United States troops who were sent back to America in body bags, but we saw the creation of situation which saw the growth of Islamic State. So they've intervened in Venezuela. They're going to intervene in Iran. Maybe they've intervened as I'm speaking. And they think that somehow, by throwing a few bombs around, that they're going to change the course of history and ensure that the 3.5% of people living in the United States of America have access to the world's resources. Now, when you listen to the buffoon in Washington, It's interesting regarding the rantings and ravings regarding Greenland. Now, you may not know this, but the United States of America has had two large military bases in northern Greenland for over five decades. The buffoon wants to increase his and his mate's business empire. Greenland, full of rare earths and other minerals, although it's very hard to extract them. Venezuela, largest oil supplies on planet Earth. Iraq did have quite a huge oil supplies. It was interesting that when they entered Iraq, they privatised the oil industry, but the Iraqi government has now nationalised the oil industry, and over 50% of Iraqis earn their living through that nationalisation. And now it's Iran's turn, the second biggest oil producer, well, I think the third biggest oil producer on planet Earth. Now, if the buffoon was really interested in the 2,000-plus people we are told have been murdered by the theocracy in Iran, it's just another brutal theocracy, you would think they would have a little bit of interest in what's happened in Gaza, where over 70,000 people, you know, one-third children, were murdered by the Israeli state. You would think that maybe they'd be interested in Myanmar, where the opposition has fled into the countryside and is conducting a war of resistance. There are many places on planet Earth where the buffoon and his little toy soldiers could become involved, but it just seems they're only interested in those places on planet Earth which are awash with natural resources, so they can get their little paws on these natural resources. And all those people who think that somehow the buffoon's intervention in Iran is going to resolve the Iranian people's situation need to think again. But it's fascinating how power has got to the buffoon's head. You know the old adage, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It looks like the buffoon is beginning to believe his own propaganda. And let's not forget the situations countries like Venezuela and Cuba and Iran find themselves in to a significant degree is due to economic blockades, which in the case of Cuba have been in existence for over 60 years. So let's not forget that. You create the problem, then you get on your white charger and ride in and say you've resolved the problem while ensuring that that sovereign nation state's resources become the property of the buffoon and his mates in corporate America. What can I say? What can I say? The world watches. Now, I understand there's a new job available. United States ambassador. Good old Kevin Rudd has resigned. Obviously, he's had enough of that garbage job. Now, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring, and I think you should throw your hat in the ring. What we need in this country is a profusion of people who are willing to call a spade, who are willing to call a buffoon, whether that buffoon is elected or not, who are able to discuss the hypocrisy. Here we have the buffoon caring, in inverted commas, for the Iranians who've gone into the streets, who are attempting to overthrow a brutal theocracy, while in his own country, his ICE agents, masked, military uniforms, loaded guns, semi-automatic and automatic guns, go around harassing people, injuring people, recently killing a US citizen, and the list goes on and on. Here's the buffoon using the courts to try to criminalise his political enemies. And all of a sudden, he's decided that he's got a heart and he's going to help the Iranian people and he's going to help the Venezuelan people. What he's actually doing is helping himself. So hypocrisy, buffoonery, run hand in hand. And if 3.5% of the world's population think the rest of us need to kowtow in order to survive, they got something coming. And it's really, 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 really sad to the situation in this, to see the situation in this country within this government and this government and this opposition have stitched themselves to Uncle Sam's coattails and continue to be shat on and continue to call for more. Let's move on. Fires and floods. Now, those of you who are old enough may remember Dorothy McKellar, the great Australian poet, who did a very famous poem which us little kiddies in the 50s and 60s, early 60s, would learn at school about a land of flooding plains. Now, obviously, there have always been fires and floods on the Australian continent. Now, we know that First Nations people were able to ensure that devastating fires that we see today didn't occur because of the way the land was managed through burning. And if you're interested in that, I'm sure there's much material you can look at that. You can actually look at that in some of the national parks in northern Australia where they've reintroduced what they call pattern burning. Now, obviously, I speak from experience. I've had a house destroyed by fire over 20 years ago. And it's not a very pleasant experience, especially if you're not insured. It's a horrible experience. And obviously, insurance companies in this country are about making a buck. Well, that's what it is. They're gamblers. You know, you pay your insurance and you're gambling. They are gambling that nothing's going to happen to the house and they take your money and they make a profit. So we are seeing increasing number of fires and floods, much, much, much more than we've seen in the past. Much more. I was talking with a refugee from Iraq 2 days ago, and he was telling me that over the last 30 years, the temperature in Iraq has increased by 10 degrees, and in summer, temperatures can rise up into their 50s. We had temperatures in their mid-40s in Victoria, and we've seen the resulting devastation. And the fact is that changes in government policy, where they encourage people to leave during catastrophic warnings, have had an extremely positive effect in terms of the death toll related to fires, where it currently stands at one. But in 2009, when people were asked to stay at home and defend their property, the death toll, I think over 120. But what we are seeing is not just increasing temperatures, and anybody involved in the land will tell you that the agricultural cycle is changing because of the different temperatures and the different rainfall patterns. But the problem is, although we react, we are not that interested in looking at the main reason for the increasing severity and increasing frequency of floods and fires on the Australian continent. And very, very few people are willing to mention the elephant in the room, climate change. Human-induced climate change. When you've got a buffoon masquerading as a tyrant who somehow thinks that the climate emergency is a hoax, you realise there are issues. And when you have a government which continues to open coal mines despite its rhetoric regarding clean energy, clean renewable energy, you begin to realise there's an issue. It doesn't matter how many volunteers you have, how many people put their lives at risk, how many people try to protect their community. The fact is that history is littered with examples of civilizations, whether it's the Khmer civilization in Cambodia, or many civilizations in South America and North America. The fact is that human-induced climate change causes major issues, and these issues will continue to be a perennial problem until we take the issue of the climate emergency as reality. And unfortunately, there's still too many people in this country, let alone the US of A, who somehow believe that the climate emergency doesn't exist. That we live in a land of flooding rains and fires. That nothing has changed. Well, things have changed. And they've changed rapidly in the last 30 years. I mean, I've lived in Melbourne for what, almost 50 years? And I remember when there were four distinct seasons. I remember you could plant your winter vegetables and you knew that they would grow. But today, the planting cycle is different. Nature reacts to temperature. So, when people talk to you about fires and floods in this country, it's important that people like us who are on the margins, that's right, we're on the margins, talk about the best way to deal with this looming catastrophes. Because what we are seeing today is nothing compared to what we will have to deal with in 10 or 20 years' time if we don't take the issue of the climate emergency seriously. Now, you do what you can with what you've got. You can't do any more. If there are buffoons who think it's a hoax, and I'm talking about the buffoons in Australia, and if there are vested interests who are willing to, you know, minimise the extent of climate change and the climate emergency, well, then we will continue to suffer the same fate. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. If you're interested in ideas that are raised in this program, I encourage you to look at the Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. I encourage you to look at the web page, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, PIBCI, PIBCI.net. I encourage you to join. I encourage you to look at the Anarchist Media Institute webpage. I encourage you to go to the YouTube channel, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests, and I encourage you to get involved in as many activities as possible. It's one thing tut-tutting, it's another thing doing something. And the problem in this country is for far too long, the two major tribes have dominated activity. And what are those two major tribes? Somebody should do something about that tribe and the Gunner tribe. Now, if you're a member of the Gunner tribe, if you're a member of the somebody should do something about that tribe, maybe it's time that you seriously thought about tearing up your membership card and getting involved in activities to create a society without rulers where wealth is held in common and used for the common good. People never learn, do they? The Adelaide Writers' Festival, Australia's ultimate primary writers' festival, three entry, hundreds of participants, long history, part of the Adelaide Festival. Extraordinary. And what have they done? They've shot themselves in the foot, courtesy of the Zionist Brigade. Now, I was listening to the Premier of South Australia justifying the fact that an Australian-Palestinian author, Abdul Fattah, had her invitation to speak at the Writers' Festival removed. And he said, if you look at her postings, she's anti-Israel and anti-Zionist. Not pro-terrorist, but anti-Israel and anti-Zionist. When was it a crime to be able to disparage an ideology? I mean, anarchism is an ideology. Marxism is an ideology. Communism is an ideology. Socialism is an ideology. Zionism is an ideology. Are there some ideologies which are beyond criticism? When have we not been allowed to call out a sovereign nation state which is involved in atrocities and the occupations of lands that people have inhabited for thousands of years, as we see in what's left of Palestine, in the Gaza Strip and the shrinking West Bank? Why can't we criticise the fact that the Israeli state is bent on expelling every Palestinian from the areas they occupy? Why can't we criticise the use of food as a bargaining chip in a so-called war? And the list goes on and on. We have now reached a situation in this country where to be a trade unionist is to be a criminal, where to be pro-Palestinian is to be a criminal, where to be anti-Zionist is to be a criminal. And the list goes on and on. We're going down this slippery slope where somehow we think that criticising an ideology, criticising the behaviour of a sovereign nation state is somehow some type of traitorous, can't even get the word out, activity, you know, the activities of a traitor. It's just extraordinary. Well, for once, we saw the writers of this country, The people who put their thoughts down on paper. The people who spearhead debate. Come together and say the expulsion of an Australian-Palestinian orphan from the Adelaide Writers Festival is wrong, and we will withdraw our participation and support. Irrespective of what governments say. And that's what we saw. And that's the way things should be. We should not be cowed by people who have loud voices, by people who somehow think they're different. We should not be cowed in that situation. And the writers of this country did this country a favour and stood up and said, although we may not agree with what Dr. Fattah has said, we stand by her right to come here and expound those views, to somehow conflate the atrocity in Bondi Beach with somebody promoting a pro-Palestinian cause is one breach too far away. And for far too long, we have seen governments kowtow to the Israeli lobby, governments kowtow to the United States lobby in this country. And if you think there's no Israeli lobby and no United States lobby in this country, think again. Because I'm concerned, not that it matters, I'm an old man, doesn't really matter, I'm going to die soon anyway. But the fact is I'm concerned for younger people in this country. Here we are, a direct target in any forthcoming war on the planet. A direct target. Here we are, fully supporting the ambitions of an expansionist, imperialist United States of America, 3.5% of the world's population, hanging onto its coattails, somehow thinking they're going to save us. The fact is, they may save the government of the day, but they're not going to save us. We are now part and parcel of the world. Isolation is no longer a mechanism by which this country is protected. We have United States bases at Alice Springs, at Pine Gap, Northern Territory, North Queensland. We have 3,000 US troops at any time stationed in this country. And somehow we have a defence pact through AUKUS, which integrates the United States military digital industrial complex with the Australian digital military industrial complex, totally integrated, where we can't even defend our country unless we're given the right passwords by the United States of America. And you wonder why so many people somehow continue to feel, that this is the only way forward. It's an extraordinary state of affairs. It is a dangerous state of affairs. And we will pay that price. We will pay that price. And if you think the United States of America is really interested in what happens in this country, think again. Listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. Let's move on. It's interesting how there never seems to be enough resources for emergency support, for public housing, public education, public health. Never seems to be enough resources. Although the United States of America has 3.5% of the world's population, Australia has 0.3% of the world's population. But we're considered to be one of the 20th richest sovereign nation states on planet Earth, right? 0.3% of the world's population. And every week I talk about the growing inequality in this country. And I see the growing disillusionment. But the growing disillusionment hasn't led to a revival in organisations and activities which promote inclusion, which promote harmony. But I've seen the growth of organisations whose political ideologies is based on creating division. For far too long, we have let the exploited, the marginalised, the ostracised be befriended by a divided nation. For far too long, we've been involved in activities, as governments have been involved in activities which promote the interests of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. The 8% that are part of the investment class in this country. For far too long, we have allowed privatisation and globalisation and corporatisation and deregulation to dominate everyday activity in this country. And it will continue to go backwards until we decide to tear up our membership card of the Gunner tribe. I'm going to do that and I'm going to do this, but you never seem to do it. And we tear up our membership of the somebody who should do something about that tribe, because you are the somebody. So I encourage you to become involved in 2026. As I said, the first program of 2026, cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. We need to move beyond that. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. This program is podcast. You'll be able to access the podcast in the next few days by going to 3cr.org.au. There are hundreds of podcasts of The Anarchist World this week. Pick and choose what you like. Use what you like. If you do, just acknowledge it's coming to you from 3CR, Community Radio Station, 3CR. YouTube channel, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. YouTube channel, josephtoscano.nam. Join Public Interest Before Corporate Interests. Well, have a look at what they've got to say. I'm secretary currently. Have a look at what they've got to say. PIBCI, PIBCI.net. Don't forget to join us for the Tanaminawaya Mawbawhina commemoration at the corner of Victoria and Franklin Street in Melbourne, midday on Tuesday, the 20th of January, to mark the execution of the freedom fighters, Tanaminawaya Mawbawhina, on the 20th of January, 1842. Hopefully you'll see you there, and if you can't make it, don't forget, the first hour of the ceremony, when we have the speakers, will be broadcast live, courtesy of Community Radio 3CR. And you can access 3CR online if you're listening to this program somewhere else in the country. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station. And if you've got any comments, you can always leave a message on 0439 395 489 0439 395-489. Listen in to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne and broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist Wall this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to the Anarchist Wall this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.